Jan, thanks for asking me to speak today. My name is Tom and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is the 21st of May 2011. I got sober in West Hollywood 13 and a half years ago. Clean and sober. Started drinking when I was about 13, 14. To try and keep up with the big boys. That very quickly led to drinking too much to the point of throwing up. And then around 17 is when I discovered drugs. Moved to London from having grown up in Manchester, UK. And was sort of thrown into the entertainment scene there, record companies and television and theater and a lot all the drunkenness and drugs that came along with that, to the point where around the age of 22, I had taken way too many substances and had a psychotic break, which lasted about 3 months, of just completely losing my mind. I was admitted to as an outpatient in a psychiatric unit of the hospital that I was born in, actually, in Stockport, Cheshire. And after about 3 months of staying at my parents' house, sleeping, eating properly again, and my mum took me for walks and got me talking again. I started to recover. I stopped having paranoid delusions after about 3 months, and then my confidence slowly came back about 8 months after that, at which point I'd moved to America to attend a university. And none of the doctors who treated my acute psychosis ever brought up AA or NA or anything like that. So I was just told that I must never ever touch drugs again, but that I at some point might be able to be fine to have a pint of beer or, a drink. So I thought that hard drugs was my problem, and I kept drinking, and then that led to smoking a lot of pot in college, and then I would, occasionally dabble in the hard drugs, thinking that if I just did those in moderation, I would be fine. Moved to LA in 2007. Lots of drinking, and wreckage, being thrown out of parties and just doing really stupid stuff, putting my life in danger. Did a show in Las Vegas, drank 15 cans of beer, and then got behind the wheel of my car and smashed into another car and tried to escape and didn't get in trouble with the law for that somehow. Came back to LA having caused all this drama in this show with the producer and was replaced in the show. Came back. My last ever drunk, I went to a dinner party, had two gin martinis, a bottle of wine, got behind the wheel of my car, drove to West Hollywood, had a cocktail in the Abbey, a cocktail somewhere else. Found myself surrounded by all these people having a great time. I was sitting by myself, feeling lonely, wondering what had become of my life, what was I doing. Got behind the wheel of my car again, had to drive with the door open to look at the lines on the road to make sure I was driving in a straight line. All the lights, the headlights, the street lights, the traffic lights was all one big blurry light. Somehow parked legally. Went home, slept, woke up at 10 a.m. with a raging hangover. Went to my local breakfast spot, the French Market on Santa Monica Boulevard. It's not there anymore, but The waiter comes over and he asks me what I need, and I lowered my sunglasses and said, I need to go to a meeting. Not sure where that came from. Didn't really have much knowledge of AA at the time. Had once driven this girl to an AA meeting and seen the people standing outside and thought, oh, those poor, sad people. And never once occurred to me that, I was one of them, but these words somehow they popped into my head, into my mouth, and the waiter said, well, I'm in AA, I'll take you to a meeting. So that happened, and I went to a meeting and I heard what I needed to hear. I found myself surrounded by people that were speaking my language, and I felt this instant sense of belonging and warmth. Ended up doing a lot of gay AA in West Hollywood, and just was, just met all these really attractive men who were very warm and welcoming and gave me hugs. And I wasn't able to find that in the gay bars and the gay clubs. It was more kind of dark and cold and about sex. It wasn't about the kind of brotherly love that I found amongst gay men in gay AALA. So that was fun. I went to the AALA, whatever they call it, roundup thing, and I got involved in the original musical that they put on there, and did H and I hospitals and institutions after getting a year sober. Built up this fellowship, went to this thing called Hot and Dry in Palm Springs, and it was just this big gay party, and it was great. Just built up this network of sober friends, and had a great time and got a sponsor and worked the steps, and it was very easy to get sober, actually. It was much, my life in sobriety was just so much easier. I had structure, I had a routine, I did a 90-90. I wasn't dealing with hangovers. Yeah, of course I was tempted, especially by the smell of pot. I was mostly tempted by that. And I also wrestled with the label for a while, the alcoholic thing, because my life wasn't as bad as a 33-year-old as it had been when I'd had my psychotic break as a 22-year-old. So I thought, well, my life really isn't that unmanageable compared to how unmanageable it was when my brain was a vegetable. So it took me a while, but I did the steps and I did the writing and I did a fourth step, and all the evidence was there. It was all on paper. The evidence said that I was an alcoholic. And so I slowly, I guess, came to terms with that. Which wasn't something difficult to come to terms with, because I had all of these friends and people that I looked up to, and these great examples of sobriety, of people who were living successful lives and seemed to be happy and had connection in their lives. And so yeah, the journey of sobriety has been life-changing, and I think of the day that I got sober, the incident with the waiter, as being the most fundamental, important moment of my life, and the time where I was going in one direction, and then this event happened, and then I started going in a completely different direction. And around year two is when my anger issues came to the fore. I got into a relationship when I was about 4 months sober, and when I hit about 2 years sober, I broke up with him, and all of this anger surfaced, and I got into, I think, three separate incidents with the police. One of them, I was yelling at an old woman inside her car because I parked my bicycle and she didn't like where I'd locked my bicycle. Another one, I was running for a bus and I'd crossed this, ran across the street, and the bus driver thought it was dangerous how I'd cross the street, but I wouldn't get off the bus. And then me and my ex had a physical fight and I called the police, but the police ended up putting me in the back of the car. Anyway, all of this anger that I wasn't able to medicate with drugs and alcohol, but I got through it. I stayed sober. And 7 years into my sobriety, was like the mother load of all anger issues, where this woman pissed me off to the point where I kind of was walking towards her, pointing my finger at her, yelling, I don't know what, like, you fucking cunt, I'm gonna fuck you up, or something like that. And she threw herself on the ground in the middle of the road, pretending that I'd pushed her to the ground, started shrieking. Long story short, police came. She lied to them that I'd pushed her to the ground. I got handcuffed, sent to jail, charged with battery and hit and run. Paid a lawyer $7,000, did 100 hours of community service and 26 hours of anger management. Got through that, managed to, stay on the right course, keep my job, get my green card, which then became citizenship. Held down this job, which was made, I was able to save all of this money working as a singer on a cruise ship, and I had all this paid time off, which was amazing. So for 8 years, I was traveling the world singing in a group of two singers and eight dancers, and saving a shit ton of money. So I was able to buy a condo in Long Beach, which I renovated and sold, and bought a house in Long Beach, and moved back to England a year ago, got in a touring musical here, got an agent in London. Now I've just been cast in a pantomime in the Wolverhampton Grand Theatre, playing the Beast in Beauty and the Beast. So, I'm back doing it again, sort of at the level that I was at when I was 21 and my whole life came to a crashing halt. Because I was really successful when I was 21. I was playing principal roles on the West End, and I was in a famous boy band. We had a top 10 single, and so I'd always thought, well, threw it all away because of drugs and alcohol, and I've been like desperately trying to get back to that like high level. And I've always been such a perfectionist, and I've always thought, like, can't really look back and say that my life was a success unless I get back to that really, really high level that I was at, and all the pressure that I put on myself to do that. And what the program teaches me is that it's not about that, right? It's not about the recognition and the accolades and how successful you are in your career. It's about your internal happiness. And how do you define success? I think success for me today is more about how many meetings I've gone to in a week. Because if I've gone to seven in a week, I'm probably in a really good headspace. I'm not obsessing about myself, not behaving like a narcissist or a sociopath. I'm thinking about my family, I'm thinking about my friends, I'm having feelings, I'm living life on life's terms. I mean, one thing that being really ill and going down the rabbit hole and losing your mind gives you is that it really gives you perspective. It really makes you able to sweat the small stuff. And I do think that having gone through this traumatic experience that drugs and alcohol created for me has made me stronger. And of course, it's put me and like everyone in this meeting today in the privileged position of being able to help someone in a way that non-alcoholics cannot, which truly, truly is a gift. I find that if I'm in the business of sponsoring somebody and just helping other alcoholics, I do feel better. You know, I do feel more serenity. You hear it said all the time that service and helping other people is this sort of secret key to happiness and serenity, and it's true. It really it works, but it's not something that I intuitively or instinctively want to do. I don't wake up in the morning thinking, "How can I be helpful today?" No, I think about what can I eat? Where can I get coffee? What can I do to make my body look more attractive? It's all about me. Like, it's all about me. I have to be reminded that when I make it all about me, life sucks. Oh dear. Yeah, life gets very lonely. I've been in a romantic relationship now for 18 months, and that's the longest relationship I've had since that one that I was describing in my early sobriety. So I think another thing that AA has given me is the ability to be in a relationship. And I think that's, you know, that's just sort of maturity, isn't it? I think the steps give you maturity. They give you the maturity that a lot of other people get when they're not drinking and not doing drugs. So yeah, I guess it's taken me 13 years to figure out how to be in a relationship, or maybe I just hadn't met the right person. I don't know. How much time have I got, Jan?
How much time have you got left? As much as you need, mate.
Okay. Well, then I'll wrap it up. Just by saying, by talking a little bit about my experience with religion and you know, God and all of that stuff. I was an atheist. When I came into AA, I was a devout atheist. I read a book about called The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, and I read so much truth in his argument for atheism that I had a spiritual experience. No, I was moved to tears by the truth in his words, and I wanted to buy 10 copies and start handing them out to young people and educate people and say, this is the truth. And I would get very drunk and very angry and go to family Christmas parties and start yelling, fuck Jesus and all of this stuff and being really out of control. I don't have a resentment towards Christianity anymore. That's something that I've acquired in AA. I do have a lot of respect for atheists and agnostics among AA. I think I always think it's really brave and admirable when I see somebody in a meeting out themselves as an atheist. I would say that I've probably gone from being an atheist to an agnostic in the sense that today I look for coincidences. I look for ways in which that in w which I can be placed in what I describe as the flow of the universe. And I do feel that after I meditate, after I did a course on transcendental meditation in LA, and probably wasn't worth $1,000 that I spent on it, but it was interesting, and it got me to meditate 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the afternoon every day. And I did feel this sort of sense of being in the groove and being able to accomplish things in the day in a way that was effortless and pleasurable. I wasn't fighting anything or anyone. It really worked for me, meditation. And I've been and you know I've been exploring in sobriety ways in which nature can make me feel like I'm being taken care of. You know, it's there's a sort of a I mean, there are times where I've been doing step work by myself in nature, and I've been talking about how my character defects are still applying in my life today, and sort of asking for them to be removed, and I've felt this sort of sense of being protected by the wind almost and stuff like that. Anyway, so I've been exploring the possibility that there is a higher power of my own understanding. But it's all very much kind of faking it till I make it. And so it's refreshing to know that there are people out there who reject the word God. I find that very refreshing because I've never liked that word and I still don't really like it. Doesn't really sit with me at all. And the words higher power sometimes feel a bit phony to me as well. So you might say that I've been sort of coerced into looking for a higher power, and in doing so, I've had some sort of lovely hikes in nature, and I've started recording myself speaking into my phone and journaling and having conversations with this imaginary entity that, you know, may be guiding me or listening to me or whatever. But I don't really believe it. I don't really believe that there is an entity that is listening. I think perhaps just articulating stuff or writing stuff down allows me to organize my thoughts, which in turn allows me to think more clearly, and it which in turn frees my brain from the kind of fog. In the same way that going to a meeting does, you know, when I go to a meeting and share, especially when I share, I find that I leave that meeting with a new sense of clarity and lightness, and feeling that I belong in a group, which brings me a lot of serenity. And with that, I shall stop talking. Thank you, Jan, very much, and I look forward to hearing how everyone else is doing and what everyone else has been going through. Cheers.